Welcome to Ballistic Radio, Cincinnati's only gun talk show. Join us. We're going to explore the topic of firearms and your rights as a law-abiding citizen. Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Kyle's Gun Shop in Finneytown, your source for premium firearms and ammunition. Now here's your host, John Johnston, on 55KRZ, the talk station.
Good evening and welcome to a very special season one finale of Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Kyle's Gun Shop in Finneytown, your source for premium firearms and ammunition. Visit them online, kylesgunshop.com. I'm your host, John Johnston, 1 year older today as well. It's my birthday. Hey. Remember, you can always listen to past shows at ballisticradio.com and get the latest behind-the-scenes info at facebook.com/ballisticradio. Also, you can enter for contests, for instance, the one that we're having today, giving away all sorts of cool stuff. We're going to be giving away a firearms coating from Blackfire Ordnance Group that's worth about $400, holster and mag pouch from Darkstar Gear, and also a belt from Volan Gearworks. So total prize package of about $600. And paying attention to Facebook would have been a really, really good way to get in on that. But we're going to let you, the listener, get in towards the end. Maybe, possibly, we'll see how it goes. Tonight I've got with me Craig Douglas, a.k.a. Southnark, a.k.a. Tyler Durden. Fight Club reference. He's going to be joining me, and we're just going to get him on the line right now so we can try and get to everybody. Craig, are you there?
Hey, John, I am.
Hey, perfect. Thanks for joining me this evening on semi-short notice. I appreciate it.
Dude, no problem, man. I appreciate you having me back.
Hey, no worries. For people that are not familiar, just real fast, your background, and then we'll get right into contest winners and questions and all that.
Absolutely. 21-year police officer, lifetime martial artist. Most of the time spent in narcotics, a couple years spent in undercover narcotics, and basically I think I'm probably known in the industry for grapple range shooting. And solo structure movement, and anything involving probably a niche area. I don't really do basic two-day firearms or even advanced two-day firearms, one-on-one type stuff. It's usually tactics, ammunitions-based, intermixed with some hand-to-hand stuff, and that's really about it. Probably generally really horrific problems.
Yeah, the absolute worst-case scenarios, and I've taken...
Exactly.
Taken two of the four classes that you offer, and I can attest to the fact that they're definitely worst-case scenarios. So we'll hop right in. It is the season one finale of Ballistic Radio, and we are doing a thing where we pose a question online as far as what listeners wanted us to talk to tonight. So talk about tonight, I should say. Without further ado, our first winner from Facebook, Matt Boardman, with the question, what is better training for a new shooter, either a shooting class first or something that has to do with like force on force and problem solving? So I'll let you start, Craig.
You know, I think that's a good question. And I think the going back to the question itself, what's the best class for a new shooter? If we're thinking about developing a person as a tactician, then, you know, is the first thing we need to even start with shooting. If I had my druthers, I would probably take someone that I cared about and talk about, as I do in coursework, the criminal assault paradigm, how things typically evolve, and begin with a deselection model.
Right.
Whatever that model is, my version of that is, as you know, is what I call management of contacts. And it's
right.
Basically a strategy template for avoidance, awareness, and deselection. Then we can start looking at things like shooting,
mm-hmm.
you know, or contact weapons or empty hand stuff. And I think if I was steering that person towards handguns, then I would probably start with live fire, you know, just simply because you know how jarring it is. And I'm sure you've taken first-time shooters out at the range.
Yeah.
When they first fire a handgun, I'd probably start really, 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 you know, easy and gentle. And I don't do too much of that, but I've got some clients here at home that I do work with.
You know, I didn't know you knew what easy and gentle was, Craig.
Yeah, I know. those are not two adjectives that are typically associated with Chevrolet's coursework, no doubt.
No.
But, I would probably start them that way, you know, just so they get accustomed to handgun stuff. and get them driving in the concept of, you know, aligning the bumpy things and pressing the trigger that Tom Givens likes to put out. It's pretty simple.
Right.
And once they got accustomed to that, I'd say probably, I don't know, a couple of days, you know, 16 hours of formal instruction. Then we can start looking at big picture stuff with force on force. I think that's pretty important to inject relatively early. And based on some things that I saw happen in this experiential learning lab that I did last weekend at the Rangemaster Conference, that supposition of mine is stronger than ever, you know, that we need to get people working with force on force pretty quick in their development.
It seems like, too, and I think that as people, it's kind of hard to define what a new shooter is anymore, too, because a lot of people, when they say they're a new shooter, what they really mean is they're new to carrying a gun on a day-to-day basis, which, you know, is interesting to me just to see, I guess, the shift in mindset that occurs that when you start doing that versus, you know, you've spent a couple years on the range. Do you think that for the newer concealed carrier, that the focus is too much on, well, the firearm is the problem-solving tool as opposed to the what's in between my ears is the problem-solving tool?
I think so, probably. I think it's a fair statement. I don't think it's anybody's fault. You know,
yeah.
I don't think it's an issue of malice, but, you know, they're shooters and they're going to where they think they need to go, which are firearms instructors. And, you know, there are a lot of guys that are teaching in local gun stores and CCW classes and things like that that really – that's all they know is
yeah.
a gun. And a lot of these guys have never been involved so much as in anything as egregious as a shouting match.
Right.
Much less actually facing somebody down with a muzzle. So, yeah, you know, I think it holds around the system. I don't know if that's all. You know, I've got a gun and go to a firearms instructor.
Right. And it was funny because you actually just did a really good impersonation of a McDonald's drive-thru there with your phone cut. Now it was kind of awesome. So I only heard about a quarter of that, but I think I know what you were trying to say. We got about a minute left. We're talking with Craig Douglas. As far as if someone is looking at taking a force-on-force class, what are one or two things they should be looking at as far as instructors go just in the next 40 seconds?
I would say the instructors need to have a good, deep background in doing that, in force and force. How long have they been doing it? You know, are you know, they've been doing it for a decade. There are a couple of guys out there that are not real well known that have been doing this kind of stuff for a long, long time. One that comes to mind is Rich Daniel. He's in the Pacific Northwest in Portland, Oregon. And Rich was doing stuff with Airsoft. And has been consistently doing airsoft, force-on-force type stuff, and good decision-making, probably since the mid-90s. Carl Lynn with K&R Solutions in Austin, Texas. You know, Carl's been doing stuff. He's not a well-known guy. You know, he doesn't have a road show, but Carl's been doing solid work for a long time. So I would look at depth, you know, depth and history and duration.
All right, cool. Hey, it's time for the commercial break. When we get back, we're going to take some more questions with Craig Douglas, a.k.a. SouthNark. Right now, you're listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Kyle's Gun Shop, your source for premium firearms and ammunition. Visit them online, kylesgunshop.com. We're talking with Craig Douglas about all sorts of stuff. We're actually doing a contest right now. Listeners were able to submit questions on Facebook. The questions that we select to answer this evening are winning a prize package valued around $600. Last segment of the show, you will have a chance to call in and win a package because one of the questions we selected was from a dude that's not eligible to win. So, hey. Craig, are you still there?
Yes, sir, I am. And I got you on speakerphone now. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, I can hear you fine. So.
Okay, cool. I think my ear or cheek or some other body part might have hit the mute button on the iPhone.
Yeah, well, you know, it happens. So we'll hit our next question. We've got Jason Spencer, also a Facebook user, had a question about how do we identify ourselves as a good guy and not get shot by the other good guys? If we find ourselves in a situation where we've gone to guns or gone to violence in general, what are your thoughts on that?
Man, that's another really good question. So when we talk about not getting shot as a good guy or not shooting a good guy, the best way to not get shot by a good guy, whether that's a CCW guy or a responding police officer, is not to have a gun in hand.
Okay.
You know, in a lot of law enforcement academies, and I know this because I taught in a police academy for many years, police officers are taught typically gun in hand is gun in use. And in a lot of places, they make no distinction between a lowered gun, you know, a gun at the gun bearer's head, like a suicide by cop thing, yeah, or a gun at them. And you may get one or two drop of guns before they start putting ashtrays in you. So,
well, and that's for the listeners that are maybe not familiar as to why that is. That's just because of how quickly a muzzle can change direction and a trigger can be pulled.
Yes, okay. That's exactly why. You're already behind in the action versus reaction curve. So that being said, law enforcement has a lot of, as they call it, blue-on-blue events, you know, and I spend most of my career in plain clothes, and 2 years of that looking like a scumbag buying dope and, you know, things like that. So I'm very, very familiar with that issue, man. That's the best way not to get shot is not to have a gun in hand. Now, obviously, if you need a gun, then it's going to be in your hand. You really need to have something identifiable, if you can, that you're a good guy, and good guys need to be trained to identify other good guys. I was talking to a colleague of mine about this the other night, and noting things like, okay, if you came around the corner responding to a shooting, and you saw, you know, a guy wearing gangbanger attire with a baseball cap turned to the side, you know, baggy pants and a big clock around his neck, and this guy is holding a Glock 19 and Sewell, would that give you pause, you know?
Yes.
So I think a greater level, from a police standpoint, a greater level of whole body information gathering, and I guess the word for that would be demeanor. That's a big one. Demeanor is a huge one, you know? And
right.
Here's the problem with that. You know, when you're evaluating demeanor, you know, you're not putting a muzzle on someone and pressing the trigger. So you're already behind, and there's no good answer to this. There's no good answer. The easy answer is don't have a gun in hand.
Right.
That's the best way not to get shot is not to have a gun in hand. If you have a gun in hand, try and get rid of it as quickly as possible. If you're challenged by another good guy, I would drop the gun immediately without hesitation. I wouldn't try and reholster. I wouldn't try and gently place it on the ground. I would drop the gun, hot potato that thing.
Yeah. And for a lot of people, I'll tell you what really brought this home to me, and I didn't get to do the evolution, but at the Amos class that I went to, for the two role players that you were having everybody go against, you changed the situation up for a little bit for them and had a friendly, a guy with a badge in the scenario. And I want to say both the role players killed the cop, didn't they?
And I basically did that same version of that same evolution at the Range Master Conference this weekend. So I had 12 people in a scenario like that. And basically 10 out of 12 people shot a police officer who had his left arm extended literally right in front of his face, holding his badge, and his right arm was holding a munitions gun straight down alongside the seam of his pants. Several people saw the gun but didn't see the badge. Several people saw the outstretched hand and didn't see a badge and made a gun association and shot him. And they were already in a state of borderline hypervigilance because I just sent in a screaming female with a pair of scissors who, when they draw the gun on her, if they see the scissors, she immediately drops the scissors. So they're hyped up anyway. And then probably 30 seconds after that, boom, here comes this police officer screaming. And the scenario basically was, you know, you're walking along the street and this female comes up screaming. The police officer comes behind her. Well, what's happened is this is a detective that's lost control of his detainee, you know, and she's, you know, escaped, and it's been a foot chase for probably three or four blocks. And we know most detectives don't you know, they sit behind a desk all day. So he's probably fat and out of shape, you know, and probably frustrated. So there are a lot of, you know, MS and stuff like that. And it was a really, really, really tense situation, plausible situation. In fact, the situation that I have seen on more than one occasion with my own former agency and a couple other agencies in the area. So very plausible, very severe, something easily that you could walk right into or have, you know, roll up on you. And, man, it's really sobering to see how difficult it is to discriminate. I had one guy that came up in the middle or came up afterwards who shot the police officer and was really upset because he had just spent 4 days at a live fire course doing specifically discrimination.
Right.
And he'd spent a lot of time looking at hands and looking at, and apparently they switched like things out in the hands. Sometimes it's a badge, sometimes it's a phone, sometimes it's a gun.
Right.
And he was upset with his performance, and he you know, asked me what the drop off was as far as what happened in the evolution. And the only thing I could say without knowing exactly what he did in the former course that he was talking about was, man, the only thing I can tell you is the cardboard and the paper doesn't say anything and it doesn't move.
Right.
And if you don't have that interactivity component, you know, in your firearms training, I think if the problem in the real world goes beyond something as simple as bad guy, gun, shoot, clean, if there's any level of ambiguity, then we see some really deep drop-offs, kind of like what happened with this Alzheimer's patient in Georgia recently.
Right.
You know, that's tragic. You know, that's a legal shooting. That guy didn't get, I don't think he got Trudeau'd or anything else in that case, but he's got to live with that. He's got to live with killing a, you know, a 70-something-year-old confused old man.
Right.
And just because, you know, there's a reason it's called a legal system and not a moral system. You got to live with this stuff, and the legal standard for killing people is really not that high.
Right. Well, I mean, a really interesting example of that is, you know, when the evolution, and you and I had talked about it beforehand as far as, you know, the difference between making a tactical decision to put a round into somebody versus if you're actually able to do it. And even, you know, even in a consequence-free environment where I'm pretty certain that, you know, the other role player, Spencer, was a bad guy, I still bypassed him as opposed to putting a round into him just because it's a hard thing to do, you know?
Yeah, and you know, just going to give some broader context on that, probably for everybody that's listening.
Yes.
So, you know, in the AMIS coursework that you've taken, which is an acronym for Armed Movement Instructors, I present a problem that I call a don't shoot yet. And it's to get people away from the idea that we hear posited all around the internet and even in personal discussions where a person will say, you know, if he's in my house, he's getting shot.
And this just came up, actually.
Absolutely. And that's fine and easy to say until it's a 16-year-old kid that's scared, visibly shaking, and you've got a muzzle on this kid, and what's happened is, you know, he's got the address wrong on a text message from the slutty little cheerleader that sent him this text, and he sneaks through the window.
Right.
And he's got the wrong house, and it's really easy to say that until you're looking at that kid, you know?
Right.
Now that may not be the case. You know, maybe he's part of a burglary, but I challenge somebody, you know, everybody out there that says they would do that. You're holding a kid like that at gunpoint. He's got both his hands up. He's like, "Mister, can you just please let me go? I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry." I challenge you to go, "Hey, dude, you're in my house. Pop."
Yeah, and it's funny too because, you know, like I said, in the scenario that you had presented that I ran through or whatever, I had a pretty good idea, at least an expectation, just based off of where we were at and what we were doing, of what was going to happen. And I still, you know, I thought about it, and Spencer even said that he could see me thinking about it, but I still ended up not doing it, just kind of it's a hard thing to try and do.
And that's what I want people to think about. I'm not saying you're not legally justified, you know. That's not what I'm saying. I'm not saying it's okay or not okay, excuse me, to not shoot that guy. What I'm saying is I want to see you do it.
Yeah.
all these people that say, "Hey, man, you're in my house. I'm gonna, you know, you're getting a magazine full." Okay,
yeah.
That sounds good. You know, until it is that kid, until it is that confused old man. You know,
and
I want to see you do it.
And I think it honestly is a very large breakdown in even just the forming of the scenarios that you run yourself through as you're thinking about these things. If you've set hard and fast rules where it's like, if A happens, my response will be B, it does not allow you to adapt at all based off the situation.
I agree with that completely. And again, without that interactivity component, without adding a body that's got a mind of its own to your firearms training, and you obviously can't do that live fire.
Right.
You know, when it gets like that, when it's anything beyond, hey, simple mugger, you know, see the gun, bang,
yeah,
good to go. And I'll tell you something too, man. These incidents typically with citizens, okay, police officers too, but citizens especially. Man, these things get national media attention.
Oh yeah.
I mean, look at the Zimmerman shooting.
Exactly. Hey, we've got to go to break. When we get back, we will take another listener/Facebook user/internet user question, give away another prize package. Right now you're listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Kyle's Gun Shop. Visit them online, kylesgunshop.com. We are talking with Mr. Craig Douglas. It is the season one finale of Ballistic Radio here, and we are giving away some really cool prize packages to online users that submitted questions for us to answer. Next segment, we're actually going to be opening the lines up for callers. One of you will win a prize package valued at around $600. So, Craig, are you there still?
Yes, sir, I am.
Excellent. I have not hung up on you, which is pretty good for me. So, our next winner, Mr. Eric Christ of Cleveland. And his question, while AIWB, which is appendix inside the waistband carry, where you carry the gun forward of your hip, probably around 1 or 2 o'clock if you're a right-handed user, offers all sorts of positives, how can one easily access the gun in a manner similar to the situation of the off-duty police officer in Chicago at the gas station where he was able to disguise his draw and then shoot the bad guy? What do you think? I mean, is that something that you can do if you're carrying AIWB, and is it something that you need to do very often?
You know, I'm not sure if you need to do it very often, but mm-hmm. It's plausible that it's something that you might need to do, and I believe it can be done, and it can be done a lot easier than what most people think. So, so you're at gunpoint, and if we think about things that diminish someone's reaction time, then we can probably set this up pretty well, and we can probably pattern someone and get a gun out literally up underneath their nose. So something to think about. You're being held at gunpoint. You know, this guy's probably really, you know, he may be really jacked up, you know, shoving the gun on you, touching you with the gun, that kind of thing. One of the first things you want to do is at least show him that he's in charge. Hey, man, dude, I'll give you whatever you want, man. Here you go. And at that time, my left hand reaches back to, or my right hand reaches back to my wallet. I said, man, take it. I've got cash in there. I've got credit cards. If you want the pen, he's listening to me.
Right.
Okay. And he's seen something come off my waistband that's innocuous. Boom. Plus, he gets his way. Okay. So I'm going to cooperate. Hey, man, here you go. I'm over-talking him. I've got this constant, you know, rattle going on. Buddy, here you go, man. If you want the pens, here, I'll give them to you. Hey, man. Oh, hey, this is a nice watch. This is a $2,000 watch. And I'm, boom, I take that off. Put that either on the ground, however he tells me to do it, put it in his hand, whatever else. Dude, you want the phone? It's a brand new iPhone 5S. Here you go. You can take the phone, too. Oh, I've got another, man, I've got a PDA right here. That's when the pistol comes out and he gets a face full.
Right.
So he's seen three things coming off my waistband and coming off my body. You know, his version of me right now is absolutely compliant, scared citizen. I'm occupying his mind audibly, you know. I'm jamming him in. He doesn't have to, you know. I'm doing his job for him. It's an easy day.
Right.
It's an easy day. And he's probably had a few easy days like that. So he's seeing a good take. He's seeing, man, cash, credit cards. This guy's so scared he offered to give me the pen. He gave me his phone. He gave me, you know, his watch, gave me his wedding band, boom, and I gave him a magazine full, too. So something like that, all those, you know, setting that up for success. And, you know, that's a scenario where I wouldn't, like, draw the gun any faster. I wouldn't do anything. I'd probably pull the gun at the same speed that I pulled everything else off my waistband. And literally, I've done stuff like that when training undercover officers before, mentoring undercover officers before, and it works really well.
Yeah.
It works really, really well.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but the bad guys have been successful doing something a certain way for a number of instances. Everything's worked for them. They've not encountered resistance, because if they had, they'd probably be in jail or dead.
Yep.
So their expectation of what's happening, if you present something different like that, you can really get outside of their OODA loop. And for people that don't know, can you talk about that a little bit?
Absolutely. And you know, I tell you, man, one of the really glaring examples of that is, so Tom Givens had a little a Thai lady in Memphis. I'm not sure if you saw that video or not.
I haven't seen the video, but I'm familiar with the case.
Right. And it, the video is great, because this guy comes up and she's working a convenience store, and typical, points a gun at her a couple of times, you know, demanding the register. And she very casually just reaches over, picks up a gun, raises it to eye level, and blasts him. There's nothing, and you can see, you can't see the look on the face, on the bad guy's face, because it's grainy and it's a security cam, but you can see his posture, kind of just like citizens are like, oh my God, I can't believe this is happening.
Right.
He's basically her victim.
Right.
He's never had that happen before. He's never had anybody fight back. He's never had anybody, God forbid, try and put a gun on him in the middle of one of his robberies. It always goes his way. So, yeah, man, that's anything out of pattern like that. And here's the thing. The vast majority of the time when citizens do resist with firearms, they're successful.
Yeah,
they are, you know, and even people that are not trained. I've had this debate with several people, and a lot of people in the training industry don't like to hear this, but there are millions of people who are gun owners and self-defense and firearms is not a lifestyle for them.
Right.
Who use firearms every day to defend themselves successfully with zero training.
Yeah, and they do just so. And they do just fine. And it's funny you mentioned that, because I, you know, Claude Werner and I have had this discussion too. And in Claude's position, he takes it to the extreme, in my opinion, but it's really hard to argue with his numbers. Is that the equipment doesn't matter so much. The training, you could even argue, doesn't matter that much as I would like to justify, you know, going out and doing training every week or every month or whatever you're able to afford.
Right.
Statistically, if you resist and you're armed, you're good.
Yeah, that's absolutely true, man.
That's not to say that if you're not able to prepare yourself, that you shouldn't. I mean, because if you have the means and you have the time, it's certainly something that's helpful.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. Absolutely. I think it is better to prepare yourself. I think it is better to have training, but you can't deny that people with no training successfully defend themselves with firearms all the time.
Do you think that just stems back to the bad guys aren't expecting it? I mean, is that really the sum grand total of it? Is that they're thinking on what's about to happen is so concrete that they can't wrap their head around resistance and the time that it takes to react accordingly?
Yeah, and I think you got to remember the vast majority of these guys are not looking for a gunfight. They're looking for a payday.
Right, right.
So, yeah, I think that's exactly why it is, you know, that it works. It works really, really, really well. You know, that's the reason, you know, firearms are the great equalizer.
Right.
They are, period.
Yeah, and it's funny, too, because you could get in the argument. The thing in China recently is a really good example of what an unarmed populace looks like, you know, and that'll be a different show, I'm sure. As far as the surreptitious draw, though, as far as being able to disguise a draw, not something that you always have to do, but something that's good. I mean, do you think having a real, you know, for lack of a better term and to use sort of a cliche, but do you think having a quick draw is also important in certain situations?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Definitely having a quick draw is important. Being able to draw the gun a number of different ways, getting the gun in hand, you know, without being seen, getting the gun in hand quickly. Those are all important things. You know, how much time, you know, do I believe that getting the gun in hand quickly is probably more important, you know, than getting the gun in hand surreptitiously? Nah, I don't know. You know, you just never know what you're going to run into. You know, I would say this, you're not going to learn to get the gun in hand surreptitiously probably in a firearms instruction, a course of instruction of firearms. You know, you'll learn how to draw the gun quickly in any number of places. You know, magicians have a term called deliberate misdirection.
Mm-hmm.
And I would look there towards how do I get a gun in hand literally out in front of somebody's nose, and they're like, how'd that happen?
Right.
You know, and I think you're gonna have to go outside of firearms training to modify some of those principles and techniques to learn that skill.
Okay, and it's, you know, once again, it seems like something that might have questionable value as far as if you have to pick between devoting training time between, you know, presenting the firearm safely and quickly at all versus being able to practice to get it out. But pretty much just the more stuff you can practice, the better, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And again, I don't think a surreptitious draw is something you can practice without somebody, you know, holding an airsoft pistol on.
Yeah. Hey, I didn't notice you getting that gun out on me. Well, hey, it's time for the next commercial break. When we get back, we will be answering the final question and also giving away one of the prize packages to the listeners. I'll give you the phone number to call in when we get back from commercial. Right now, you're listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Kyle's Gun Shop in Finneytown, your source for premium firearms and ammunition. Visit them online, kylesgunshop.com. We are talking with Mr. Craig Douglas and answering online users' questions, giving away some prize packages. Next question we are answering is actually Todd Green of pistoltraining.com fame. Asked the question that we're going to answer. He does not need a prize package. So here's what we're going to do. The first person that calls in 1-800-823-8255 will win a free pistol coating from Blackfire Ordnance Group, a belt from Volan Gearworks, and a mag pouch and holster from Darkstar Gear, valued at around $600. Wow, the phone lines lit up. Craig, are you still there?
Yes, sir, I am. I think Todd should get a gift. I think he should get an autographed picture of you, John.
Oh, you think?
I think so. I think that'd be a perfect gift for Todd.
Oh, I don't think he'd care that much. Maybe I'll send him like a Rush CD or something like that. something like that. We'll see. So,
sure. Anyway,
our producer is answering the phones right now. Todd's questions. He had an interesting question, I thought. He asks, what are three things that you, Craig, do every day, all the time, related to your personal safety that probably other people don't even think to do? And what should those people be doing?
Yeah, And he hit me up on that question, so he gave me some time to think about it, so I wasn't on the radio going,
Well, I'm glad.
Yes, I got prepped just in case that question was chosen. And I thought it was a great question, and I did have to give it some thought. So I did come up with three things. I'd say the first one, for lack of a better term, I'll call it walking wide. And what I mean by walking wide is, have you ever been walking along the street on this in a city on the sidewalk, and you come to another street, you know, and you make a right or left turn, and you bump into somebody,
right?
But you have startled, oh, sorry, and you're back on your heels, and you know, maybe even somebody knocked a cup of coffee on the other guy. That happens because of you can't see, and what I tend to do. When I'm walking around, and there's any kind of obstacle, whether it's a building, a car, I use this all the time. And as you know, it's something I teach when I teach structure movement, is that you always want to take depth on anything that obscures your vision. When you have depth, you generally have a greater field of view beyond the obstruction, a wider apex. So, you know, versus cutting the corner close to a wall to make a right or a left-hand turn around a building, I really make an effort to you know, keep distance away from that and try and walk wide, take a wide arc around things. It's something that's very, very ingrained in me. I'm generally not surprised when I walk around corners. I'm not right up on anybody. I have distance, I have time, and it's just something now, obviously it's something that I use, you know, when doing structure movement, but just in everyday life, that principle of walking wide and staying away from things that obscure my vision and trying to see around them, thus giving myself range and time, that's very ingrained and something I don't see people do that much.
Right.
If that makes sense.
Yeah, no, totally. So as far as walking wide so that you don't, you're not surprised going around a blind corner or something like that, what would be the next thing maybe?
I generally talk with my hands, and my hands are active and involved if I'm engaged with someone verbally. And I teach that as a tactic, you know, to use the Jeff Thompson term of offense to describe the idea of the hands being a barrier. I do that in a way that doesn't look tactical. You know, it just looks like I'm animated.
Right.
You know, when I speak, my hands are high, they're compressed, they're very close to my head. And I've done it enough at this point where, you know, I may look like I've had a whole lot of coffee, but I don't look like I'm doing anything tactical. And when I teach that, I say, you know, probably the ultimate expression of being able to do this well is if you can do this at the water cooler at work without freaking people out.
Right.
You know, keep your hands high and compressed. And the reason we want to do that is because if I got to bust somebody in the face with a cross or a hook or whatever, you know, a punch, it's hard to see that shot coming as far as on their end. You know, there's no load. My hands are in constant motion. The other thing is if I have to drop into a default position, if I have to cover my head, my hands are really, really close to my head. Thus, I've reduced the amount of distance my hands have to travel to cover my head. So
right.
Hands stay pressed, and I talk with my hands. Hands are really part of problem solving.
Okay. So just kind of being thinking ahead as far as, well, if I have to do something, I'm already halfway there.
Right.
Okay.
Right. And yeah, that's just something I do so much at this point that I don't even think about it.
Yeah.
You know, it's not something I have to try and do. It's just part of who I am and what I do.
Right. And congratulations, by the way, to Adam from Missouri, who has won our fourth prize package. Everyone else that is holding right now that is not Adam from Missouri, I'm sorry you didn't win, but I really do appreciate you listening. So Craig, what's the third thing? You think that
I think the third thing that I do is when I'm at a gas station, I think this is probably something I want to share with everybody. It comes out a lot informally when I teach, when we just have sidebar conversations, but I don't, you know, it's not part of the curriculum. It's not something I always say, so I'm inconsistent in presenting it. When I go to convenience stores, I always park at the pumps. And I got into that habit when I was a uniformed officer, actually, because I walked in on a strong arm robbery before and didn't even see the guy because and didn't see the people that were in the vehicle that were waiting to leave with that guy. I walked in on a strong arm robbery. The reason I did was because I couldn't see. And I got in the habit later of, you know, anytime I go to a gas station or a stop, you know, stop and rob, regardless of whether I need gas or not, I'll park at the pumps. That gives me time to evaluate the vehicles that are in front of the convenience store. That gives me a wider field of view. Generally, I can see through the glass if the sun is not an issue. I can see what's going on in the store. I haven't driven right up to the problem. You know, if you want to expand on that, typically take a wide field of view. One of the things I used to do, again, before I developed this habit, was I would walk straight to where whatever it is I wanted to buy, where that item was located, and walk back to the counter, pay for the item, and leave. And I got in the habit, again, while I was a patrol officer, of typically when I go into a convenience store, probably the first place I'm going to go is the coolers. And the reason I like to go to the coolers, because if you go to where the coolers are at, they're typically against a wall. And if I'm at a corner of that, of either side of the coolers, if I'm at that corner, I can typically see all the way down both sides, and I'm at a hard corner in the structure. I'll walk the length of the coolers. It doesn't look like you're doing anything tactical. It just looks like I'm trying to get something to drink or trying to make a decision. I'm kind of indecisive. And I can hit every row. So I get an idea of what's going on in the store. Then I'll go get whatever snack or drink or smokes or, you know, can of Fix-A-Flat, whatever it is I need. I have a habit of doing that.
Yeah.
I have a habit of surveying the store. You're talking 30 seconds of time, so it's not something that's, you know, it's not something that's going to inhibit your lifestyle. It's even difficult to do. But it really can give you a good idea of what's going on in the store before you, you know, walk up in and they're blindsided.
Perfect. So for people that want to come and take a class from you, there's a couple different ways to do it. I know you're doing one of your ECQC classes at the end of March out in Oklahoma, correct?
Yes. I'm doing the, as I call it, the Extreme Close Quarters Concepts class, which is essentially an entangled shooting class.
Right.
It's basically learning how to use the gun at grapple range, whether you're standing or whether you've been knocked to the ground and you have to get the gun out. It's munitions-based. It's a low round count course. It's only 275 rounds, and most of that is spent literally with your head touching the target. So it's not a high round count course, so you're not spending, you know, $1,000 on ammo,
right,
or anything like that. I provide the munitions and the T-guns. You need to provide a pistol, ammunition, magazines, a cup, and a mouthpiece. It is it's a high level of contact as far as gun courses go.
Right.
But, you know, there's no standard to be met, so I don't expect everybody to be an athlete that comes to the course. And, you know, we've had, I think the oldest guy I've had come to the course was 71 years old, and he had to actually Allen wrench his knees into a carbon fiber brace before he did the evolution.
Nice.
And he worked as hard as he could.
Yeah.
You know, we gave him more pressure than he had ever had in his life, and he was fine. So,
right,
you know, that's what I'm looking for in that coursework, is to work hard as you safely can. I know a lot of people will see videos that students post, you know, like on YouTube, of their evolution, and the first thing they think is, oh, my God, he must have a horrendous injury rate. Actually, no. I would say my injury rate in that coursework in 10 years of open enrollment training is probably less than your average flag football league.
Perfect. Hey, Craig, I really appreciate you taking the time to come on tonight. Another place that's Ohio, especially if they want to check you out, will be the Polypalooza 2 training conference. It's starting Saturday, August 16th, running through the 17th. Craig, thanks, man. I appreciate it.
Thank you, buddy.
Hey, no problem. I'll talk to you. So next week, season 2 of Ballistic Radio is going to start. Just want to take a second to thank Kyle Hufford of Kyle's Gun Shop for giving me the opportunity to do season 1. Looking forward to some exciting new things starting next week. We're going to be having Frank Proctor joining us. Frank is the mastermind of Way of the Gun Performance. Special Forces dude, competitive shooter, should be a good show. Make sure you check us out, ballisticradio.com, for past shows, podcasts, and also Facebook, facebook.com/ballisticradio, to get in on the cool contest where I give stuff away. Tune in next Sunday, 7 p.m., everybody. Be safe, and thanks for listening.